And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 796. Coming at you on a Tuesday evening. I'm going to talk some NFBC ADPs, some debates, just in general, looking at certain players and where they're going in these early draft champions, the last 10 draft champions, to be precise. We'll discuss that and much, much more. The hot stove, first thing this morning, felt like it was in fuego, died off rather quickly after a couple moves. But hey, there's more days to come, hopefully, through the winter meetings to help me break down today's moves, some ADP and more. You can find them on Twitter at @BreakingBent_T. Benton, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Good to be back after a week off. No fault of anyone's, just didn't work out last week. But yeah, and you're definitely getting me a little more into the drafting mindset here, because I have not started my prep and we'll be talking ADP, which I try to avoid till after I do my prep, but it'll be okay.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of tricky. Like, I know Ben's straddle, so every time I try to think of a deal, I message him and I go, anything you'd like to talk about during your draft prep? And I know where his answer usually is, but I ask. And so then I'm like, okay, I'll put something together. We're going to get those wheels churning, and you'll be draft prepping in no time. But it doesn't mean you have to draft, though, Ben. Just remember that. You can prep.
Right.
You don't have to draft.
I did think about starting like catcher rankings, but I still want to know, like, I want like the big free agents to sign, and like that will shift like lineup positions and stuff like that. So there's still some dominoes will fall after all that still, but I don't want to like redo my work too many times if I can help it.
Oh, that's the story of my life. Fixing my mistakes is that's you know, it should be a bumper sticker on my truck. But speaking of moves that could change things, we'll start with one, Ben. Kyle Schwarber. All this talk about, you know, he's going back home to Ohio and he's back in Philadelphia. 5 years, $150 million. We know he's a beast. I honestly don't think it affects much at all, to be honest with you. His ADP is 25 for a util player is amazing. Thoughts on Schwarber back in Philadelphia?
It made sense. He was pretty valuable to their team. That's not a pretty bold statement, but I guess this, I kind of mentioned the signings and then like the dominoes falling afterwards. So I think this bumps Otto Kemp, if I had to guess, out of the projected lineup for the Phillies. It's hard to say. It's still so early. They could sign other players too. It's some, like, I think they were talking about Nick Castellanos playing first base potentially, but on a different team if he got released. So this makes sense. And the Phillies will still be a great lineup. Didn't get any weaker so far. So, and it was like, did he bat leadoff Schwarber last year? I feel like he did sometimes.
He did, yes. I remember the year before, I'm pretty sure it was like all the time. He did have his leadoff moments for sure.
Yeah, if they want to alternate the lefties and the righties, I could see the Phillies going Schwarber, Turner, Harper. But right now it's showing Turner, Schwarber, Harper. But it doesn't really matter where he hits Schwarber. So yep. Still going to be a pretty great pick.
Yeah, it just comes down to when he did it last year, to the surprise of many, is if he gets hit for average, the dude's a fantasy monster, and he even threw in some stolen bases to top it off. So as a little bit of everything last season. And like you said, perfect storm, Philadelphia, good ballpark, good lineup. Shouldn't, on paper, change much at all. Now, this was a rather big domino, not for your catcher rankings, Ben, but for the relief pitching landscape, which is a mess if you tried to prep right now. It is all over the board, but it has cleared up as late. We've seen Devin Williams sign. We'll get to that in a minute because that's a domino part of this. Ryan Helsley has signed. Like, there's moving in this department. And the Los Angeles Dodgers, who I guess their biggest weakness all of last season, which is crazy to say when you win the World Series, your biggest weakness was the bullpen. Tanner Scott was really good. Then it went away, and they just had a bunch of guys moving through like a turnstile in the ninth. Well, they've tried to fix that. The Dodgers have signed Edwin Diaz to a 3-year deal. So what was already the best team in baseball just got even better, which is somehow possible. Edwin Diaz to LA. We'll start with that, Ben. Currently, Diaz's ADP is 36 over the last 10 drafts. That is the second reliever off the board behind Andrés Muñoz and like a half a pick before Mason Miller and Johan Duran's right there. So it's a pocket of closers. What's your thoughts on this Edwin Diaz signing in LA?
Well, I think where he's going in ADP makes sense. You could easily argue that he should be the RP1 Diaz, just because I know historically, and I think I said it, I don't know if I said it in the Discord or not or somewhere else, but the Mets haven't been giving him many save opportunities as he probably should the last few years. So I don't know if he's cleared 30 saves in a couple of years. Diaz, but now with the Dodgers, assuming they use him full time as the closer, which they should, he's definitely a lock for 30 saves. I think 40 is very easily attainable for him. And then so I mentioned the Dominoes earlier again, but now this kind of squashes the Roky Sasaki closer possibility, which I think you had taken a stab on him in that
Meatball.
Potential role earlier in the season. I think we were talking about you drafting him, which is unfortunate. And I think the closer, after being burned by the closer signings last year, it's definitely a reason why I do like to wait, because you don't have it on the outline, but I'll mention it now. But even with the Nationals Mariners trade, where Jose Ferrer, he got traded, and I'm sure plenty of people have drafted already were relying on him as a RP2, but now you lost your RP2. But when it comes to the Dodgers, I don't know, anything can happen. Like Diaz, he could just kind of lose it, but he was so dominant last year that I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So it's pretty annoying that they went out and got somebody else like this.
Yep, it just it squashes Tanner Scott. I would imagine. I don't see how they platoon Edwin Diaz. Scott becomes a solid setup man, and in case of emergency, he can break glass type situation. Edwin becomes one of the top options. Andres Munoz is up there. I love Mason Miller. He's still my top. But, Diaz, to your point, 28 saves last year, 20 saves the year before. Obviously, in 2024, when he had the 20 saves, he struggled a lot. Like, he had to go to the injured list. They took him out of the role for a bit. But then it was 32-32 in his first in the previous two seasons. But, yeah, dude's awesome. Really, really good closer. One of the best in the game. Strikeouts are good. 98 Ks last year. He had 118 in 2022, so he's still a very strong arm, to your point. Couple of things here. I know when Devin Williams signed with the Mets, there was like rumors that, hey, the Mets are still trying to bring in Edwin Diaz, and Devin Williams is good with the setup role. Right now, Devin Williams' ADP is 84 over the last 10 drafts, as high as 53. So he's on the rise. If you're using Ryan's ADP tracker, you can see all of that. Like, he's a definite boom on that one. I feel like, and the Mets have said it, and everybody says things who will believe it when you see it. They basically said with Edwin Diaz gone that Devin Williams is their closer this year. They said that today at the winter meetings. What are your thoughts on that when it comes to draft day now? I know, again, just starting your research.
It makes sense to go after Williams. He definitely, let's see if the stats from last year still appear for him. He definitely pitched better in the second half of the season, probably like the last third of the season. And even that was outside of the, I don't know how much being out of the closer role really helped Williams, because once Bednar was acquired by the Yankees, it really cemented Williams out of the role. And looking at, just scrolling through ADP right now, looking at the pitchers, it feels like it makes sense that you're saying that these guys are gonna move up potentially, well, at least Devin, but it feels like there's a lot of guys who are going relatively early already, which I think maybe they don't always move. They all won't move up as much as we're probably thinking, because of now we're getting so many more settled, quote unquote, settled jobs that the demand for those, like that upper tier, may not be as great, because now you can get Devin Williams in the sixth round of a DC. It'll probably end up being the fifth round, to your point, but that's still a pretty good deal on who was arguably the, I think I had him as my RP1 last year, Williams. Yep. Didn't work out that way, but that's just the way closers go. So I think it helps make the closer rush not so much of a rush anymore.
Yeah, it's just interesting looking at the ADP tracker. So when he signed, he basically, the very next draft, he went pick 55. This is Devin Williams, by the way. Then when the rumors came out that he wasn't for sure the closer, it was back to 90, 78, 75, 89, 88, 82, 85. Today, he went at 67. So, like, he's when Edwin gets signed. So that move is real. But, like, it's just interesting to track, because, like, a guy like Ryan Helsley, he took a massive jump after he signed. Eventually, it'll even out, to your point. But let's do the flip side of this one. Jose Ferrer, who I'm glad you brought him up, because I forgot to put him on there, because I do like him as an RP2. I took him in a lot of places. The good thing in DCs, you take three or four guys. And usually if I was taking a Ferrer, I'd make sure to get another type like that, because I know there was already risk involved. I wasn't going to battle with nothing else, basically. Let's put it that way. I knew that there's a chance things could get wonky. And so a guy like Jose Ferrer, who goes to Seattle in the trade for Harry Ford, and obviously Munoz is the closer there, and they have Matt Brash and other great relievers. Fair doesn't change a ton. He's been around 220 to 240. He went as high as 268, but he's still sitting like he actually went 170 and 206 the last two drafts, which is interesting. So his ADP hasn't changed much. I think people are just cool with the setup role and maybe the occasional save in a DC.
Or they just missed the news, potentially.
That's very, very possible as well.
If I see the ADP, they're like, oh, I'll take the Nationals closer as my RP2.
If I see a Seattle-Washington trade, I'm probably not too concerned about what took place. Fair enough.
Yeah. But who knows? I know even last year, I know there were set up guys going in the 200s where I wouldn't touch them. That's just too valuable a pick, especially in a DC. So if you're not closing, you're not getting drafted by me before pick 300.
Yeah, and then Harry Ford, he's going up another 30 or 40 picks from where he was the other day. So I guess we'll have to see how that works. Do you have any thoughts on the fair Harry Ford trade, or is it more just like a is what it is? Because I'm still not sold that Ford's the full-time guy. I'm still a Ruiz believer. I don't know what he's done to lose the job besides get a disease and a concussion. Like, Ford's the next man up, don't get me wrong. And I think in the Discord we were talking like a 60-40 split. Makes sense. I can see that. But Ford's never even proven at the big league level, and we're anointing him right out the gate. So I don't know. I could be wrong. You could be Team Harry Ford. That's fine. That's just where I come from looking at. Like, I've written about Ford for like three straight seasons, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah, I was going to say. So I pulled up Roster Resource. They think it'll be Ruiz as a starter still, and they don't even have Ford on the roster. Yeah. And I went down and looked, and he's only 22. And to your point, how you've been writing about him every year, I think he signed when he was 18.
Yep.
So he's been a big prospect for a while now, and he's still super young. So maybe that's why people think, okay, now he finally got traded. Doesn't have Cal Raleigh ahead of him anymore, but he's not even 23 yet, Ford. So I don't think it really guarantees he'll be playing. I think as a potential catcher three, maybe, if you draft two really strong ones, maybe that makes sense. I don't know if I would want to do that in a DC yet. I think I'd rather have Harry Ford as my catcher four if I'm going to take a fourth catcher. But he's definitely on a good team, or a team that will make it like, or it'll improve his chances of being on the majors this year now that he's on the Nationals more than it was when he was on the Mariners, for sure. So definitely helps him. But you said he rose like 40 picks on average. What was his
ADP right now is 495. Like, so he's a catcher three world. That's the problem.
That's a little pricey, yeah. I think.
Like, there's a handful of like final five round catchers I'd be cool taking as a catcher four, instead of Harry Ford as my catcher three. As it just depends, because like I agree that I think it's a clearer path to playing time than behind Raleigh. It's just a matter of when, and does it translate right away for a 23-year-old player? That's my concerns. Like, the skills are good, but it's like they could have found places for him. They tried him in the outfield. They tried places to bring him up in Seattle. They still never brought him up. Is my point. He's still super young. He will get his chance this year. I'm very confident in that because of it's being Washington. But I mentioned it on Twitter. I mentioned it in the Discord. I'm just amazed how many people are just like anointing him the dude. Like, let's not forget, before Kyber Ruiz, starting in 2023, you hit 18 homers, was a batting average at, like, this guy was a back end catcher one, and now you're getting him middle to back end catcher two in drafts. Like, let's not forget those things as well. All right, I'll get off my catching soapbox. Let's talk some early ADPs, and it starts with catcher because I went down positionally. Okay, people, so don't go throwing tomatoes this direction just yet. But basically, what this discussion is for, I hinted at it at the intro. It's more just like the first one is like two teammates going right next to each other in drafts. Like, so playing time is going to be a concern. Let's just talk it out. Like, this is early. A lot of this ADP is going to fluctuate. Some aren't even debates. Some just a player going somewhere way lower than usual. It's like, hey, what are our thoughts? Like, it's December 9th. A lot is going to change before heavy drafting comes up. But this is where, like, if you do draft early, maybe it's a value. Maybe it's not. Like, so let's kind of talk. Maybe it's a perceived value. Apologies. Maybe it's not. So we'll discuss for a minute here. But let's kick it off, Ben, at the catching position, as I mentioned, with Samuel Basayo versus teammate Adley Rutschman. And people know how I feel about Adley, but this is more of a conversation point, as Basayo is the 11th catcher off the board over the last 10 drafts, going back to November 9th. Adley's the 12th. They're going right behind each other, one at ADP 159, one at 164. So literally, boom, boom, you got Sammy Basayo, you got Adley Rutschman. I'll let you have the floor here first, Ben. Like, what's your thoughts here? Because I ask it for the reason if they can't both play 120 games at catcher. So how does this pan out to make sense in the grand scheme of things?
Well, right now it's projected that Bisaccia would be the DH on roster resource, but that's assuming that Mountcastle and Tyler O'Neill are bench players, and I don't know if I would buy that necessarily. I think we said this when that happened, but the Ward trade kind of just bunched up their lineup even more because they have no shortage of young hitters, the Orioles, and that's because like Beavers is up now, Holiday is a staple, Kobe Mayo is up now, then of course they just called up Bisaccia last year, so a lot of corners and catchers, DH types, and they didn't really need any more of that, the Orioles, so it's tricky. I definitely feel safer that Adley would get more playing time than Bisaccia, but I didn't really heavily bank on the bounce back for Adley last year. I only took him in one draft, and it wasn't worth it. But looking at his underlying numbers, Adley's he's okay. But at this new ADP, if he's playing all the time like he did in the past, he could just volume his way to being pretty valuable. Whereas Bisaccia, he's 20, not even 22, I don't think, and it was just his first time in the majors, of course, because he got called up last year. But the K rate wasn't horrible, but it was 10 points higher than what Adley's was. The walk rate was half of what Adley's was. Bisaccia chased a lot. His XBA was only 222. So if I were making my own rankings for catcher right now, I'd probably have Adley ahead of Bisaccia just because of the prospect bias that I tend to have. And you're getting a pretty good discount with Adley here. It's at least 100 pick discount, I would say, or right on the nose, 100 pick discount compared to last year. And Adley did show some life because at least in the summer, in June and July, he hit 300, almost exactly 308 in both months. It was 309 in June, 308 in July. The power wasn't really there, but his barrel rate was like 7.5%, which is actually less than what Bisaccia was in his playing time. But I don't know. It's a tricky one. The answer could just be to stay away as well, because you don't have to take either guy necessarily. It's just if you have a strong lean, it makes sense to go one or the other. But right now, I don't really have a strong lean. I would lean Adley, but I don't know. I don't feel too confident right now saying that.
I love it. I absolutely love it, because as much as I despise drafting Adley Rutschman, if I have to pick between the two, I'm picking Adley Rutschman. And so to you said the last part out loud, probably just skipping this whole thing. Like, literally, before we started the show, Ben, I was making a pick, and it was like starting pitchers, which I already had two of, outfielders, which I already had three of, or Adley Rutschman. Those were like my options on the board, and I think I took a third starting pitcher. So it was just, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But to give some positive to it, like, I get it. Last year, he was hurt. Like, he got hurt. He spent most of the second half of the season on the IL, barely came back at the end. He's been banged up a lot lately. That's a big concern, honestly, for any catcher. But Adley's proven this is why it's risky taking any catcher early. But, you know, he hit 220. That was a bummer. But the plate discipline is still very, very good, which is what you want to see. And you mentioned, like, the barrel weight, 7.5% was the same as his, you know, 2022, 2023 seasons where he was good. 38.6% hard hit. The same as 2023 and stuff. Those are what you want to see. He actually had his best max EV ever last season. Ground ball rate went up 9%. That's not great. You don't want to see that. So it's a combination. Like, if he can start elevating the ball a little more again, get things back on track, stay healthy, things can return to a guy that hits 250, 270, somewhere in that world, get you 20 home runs. He's actually not a bad pick at this range if you want a catcher. Like, as much as I don't like Adley, if he can, it's a lot of what ifs. And the biggest problem is, as you said, he has to accumulate it, which I agree. Like, he has to be an accumulator. Bisaccia is there. And, like, as much as he's projected to DH, the team said they want to get him as much many at-bats as possible. So he's going to catch also. That's just the reality of the situation. So that's why this is a tricky one. That's why I found this ADP interesting and wanted to bring it up tonight. Most people might say, screw it, don't pick either one, they're boring. But a lot of people like Bisaccia. It was a big conversation in the Discord. We're doing that democracy draft is what we're calling it, the 12-teamer. And that was a big, like, should we take Bisaccia? Should we wait on a catcher? So on and so forth. And a lot of it was playing time based, first year player, because of what you mentioned. Like, we saw a dude that in the minors hit 23 bombs last year, but then hit four home runs and hit 165 over 31 games. Like, that's a big difference in skills. Now, first cup of coffee, as you mentioned as well, Ben. So, like, skill sets, amazing. Dude's 21. He'll be 21 years old this year. 21. I remember what I was doing when I was 20. I wouldn't even hit .167 at any level. So, yeah, it's I get it. Basile has, like, the bigger ceiling. Rutschman needs to accumulate. I'd probably avoid both. But for this season, at these prices, I'd take Adley Rutschman, which, clip it, folks. Enjoy it. I just said that out loud. All right. Let's head to first base. This isn't a one-on-one debate. It's more a player that's ADP kind of surprises me, Ben. And this is Christian Walker, a guy that was a monster with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Obviously, last year, first year in Houston, things did not go great. Hit 27 home runs, which was still good, but hit 238, only 88 RBI, 72 runs. Like, overall, stat line wasn't horrific. You just expect a lot more when you draft Christian Walker. And the reason I want to ask this is right now in these early drafts, he's the 17th first baseman off the board. His ADP is 191. He's going right after Torque, right in front of Burleson, Stewart, and Wilson Contreras. So it's a very interesting drafting spot for Christian Walker. What are your thoughts on this price tag?
I'm pretty sure we talked about Walker in the projection review, because I think it was super accurate, the aggregate of Steamer, BatX, and ATC, if I recall correctly. And then the other thing that was kind of wild, too, is that Walker's line was almost identical to his 2024 line. The only difference is that he hit like 13 points lower. So if you look at it, 238 looks a lot worse average than 251, even though it's not that far apart in reality. He had one more homer, Walker, than he did in 2024. He had four more RBIs, same number of runs, same number of steals. So it was essentially the exact same season. And I don't have last year's ADP up right now, but he definitely dropped like 50 picks at least, I would have to guess, because he's at like 190 now. I think it's like more in the early 100s, 140 range, if I had to guess. And now he's going after Aranda and Torkelson.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like the price tag is lower than usual, and the players he's going around at a bad first base position, this stood out to me. That's why I wanted to have the conversation.
He should be going more than six picks ahead of Alec Burleson, because Burleson's at 197 and Walker's 191. You can argue the age. Okay, one concerning thing I'll give the drafters this is that his K rate, Walker's, has gone from 19% in 2023 to 24 to 27.7 last year. So that is a concern. The swinging strike rate, let's check that out. His swinging strike rate, yeah, it jumped to 15%. That is concerning, but I don't know. The barrel rate was still pretty great, 81st percentile. He doesn't really chase a terrible amount. It's more just like he's swinging and missing. So he could be losing a little bat speed. Actually, he's not. It's 80th percentile. So maybe he just has to, I don't know. He could have been pressing. I think he started out really poorly, Walker, last year.
Yeah, he finished better. He hit 250 in the second half. Like, it was better than the first half for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit of an overreaction to not even that bad of a season. If you're doing really well on average and you just need a solid power first baseman, I think it's a smash pick where he's going. Because I don't know. I can't even think of who was going in this range last year that's a comparable, that has been as good as Walker has been. So I think it's a pretty interesting ADP for him.
Good. Then we're on the same page there. Like, that's why I was looking at that when I was just going through names, just to kind of put on the outline. I'm like, well, that stands out as a, like, Torque and him. I go, yeah, sure, Torque's season last year, his stat line resembled Christian Walker's. But I think at least 99 out of 10 times, if we did a debate, Torkelson versus Walker, we'd all walk away saying Walker. I'm pretty sure. Like, that's how that conversation would go. Like, unless you're Paul Spohr or some other Tigers fan, pretty sure that's where it's going. Now, it is interesting. Walker is 34. He's going to be 35 this year. He's a lot older than I expected. But, you know, a combination of first year in Houston, maybe he's pressing. And like you said, is the stat line at the end of the season still wasn't horrible. Like, if his average is back to his normal 250 range, he's probably hitting 34, 35 bombs. This is a thing of the past. Now, he didn't, obviously, so he can't go there. But It's not like he's that far off, is what I'm trying to get at. So I love the price tag. All right, let's talk teammates at first base now. Another kind of veteran versus stud name. We got Sal Stewart, the 19th first baseman off the board with an ADP of 214. Spencer Steer is the 21st first baseman off the board at 234. So 20 picks apart. You have Sal Stewart that got a little bit of time to end the season and played very well. We know the power's good. He was crushing it in the minor. He even showed some speed in the minor, but we haven't seen a full, you know, run from Stewart. And then you got Steer, who can play all over you play outfield, you can play first base. And we've seen him hit 20 home runs for three straight years and steal some bags as well, Ben. So where do you add on this one between Steer and Stewart? Stewart will be 22, Steer will be 27.
Yeah, it's pretty funny that they're going so close to each other. They're even predicted to hit back-to-back in the Reds lineup. Steer fourth, Stewart fifth. The one question mark is Christian Encarnacion Strand, if anyone still thinks that he has a shot at being a major leaguer. He's only 26 still, Strand. I think he was hurt last year. Or at least one of the years he was hurt. So that kind of – I think the first year he was supposed to break out, he got hurt. That's kind of ruined Strand's path to the majors. So he's been known for going off in spring training. And so if he does that again this year, I could see Encarnacion Strand bumping Stewart maybe. Just looking at their skills, Stewart was so good last year. His barrel rate was 17.5%. Granted, he didn't play for that long, but his XBA was 296. XWOBA was over 400. XSLUG was 651. And then Spencer Steer is a batting average drain. He hit 238 last year, which isn't horrible. The steals did go down because he only had seven. I think we were hoping for like 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he had 25 the year before. In 2023, he had 15. He was a 2020 guy, and the steals just went away. Let me see how his speed looks, because that's a big factor. Well, actually, it's not a big factor, because look at Josh Naylor and Juan Soto.
He had that shoulder injury early on and might have lingered, and maybe they just didn't want him running. I don't know. Just throwing random ideas out.
The sprint speed was 66th percentile, which is good enough. I think he could get away with that. Let me look at barrel rates. Fine. So the XBA for Steer has been, it's gone down each year. It was 220 last year, which is not very good. And that kind of supports the 238 average that he had. But that's 2 years now of a sub 240 average for Steer. So if he's not running, he loses a lot of value, because then you're getting a tank average with not as much speed that to offset that loss in average. Do you know if, the other, I can't think of his name right now. If Stewart has a history of stealing bases?
In the minors, yes. At AAA last year, he had 17 steals. Or in the minor leagues, between AA and AAA, at 17. Year before, he's had at least double digits every season.
Mm-hmm. So I guess based on that history of stealing in the minors, I would probably prefer Stewart, just because I think the batting average is likely to be much better. But with that said, though, in the small sample, Stewart chased almost 40% of the time, whereas Spencer Steer was like 28% of the time, which one's very good, one's very bad. So, but that's just a rookie potentially just being a little aggressive.
Yeah, this is Mike. I'll throw this back to you now, because I agree. It's pretty darn close. Like, it's similar to the Basayo Rushman. I think like Basayo's got the ceiling. Rushman should play a lot, like, and accumulate. I think Steer, as long as he's healthy, he's playing first base or the outfield. Like, he's out there pretty much every day. What goes on with Stewart? He's projected to DH. So that's my question to you. And again, we don't know things. That's just one reason why one of your reasons to wait and draft is, like, right now a guy's projected to DH. Now, entering the season, we might find out a team wants to rotate around. A lot of team philosophies, basically. Maybe Stewart becomes the first baseman, Steer becomes the left fielder. They tell Gavin Lux, go pound sand. This is a question that doesn't even matter. When you see a guy right now that's projected to DH, does that affect anything for you? Because we know how fluid that position can be on, like, I'd say two-thirds of teams in baseball right now.
It feels like a placeholder to me, because that's why I mentioned CES earlier, because he could easily crack the lineup based on what he's shown previously. That's why CES was going, I don't know, in the mid-100s, I think, at one point within the recent past. So... And weren't the Reds in on Schwarber? They were one of the teams rumored to be.
They were 1 year short. They offered him almost the same deal, just not as long term.
Yeah, so and there's still plenty of free agents left, like I was saying at the beginning of the show. So there's a great chance that they sign someone, and it probably kicks Stewart back to the minors if that happens, because I guess he could potentially beat out Marte in the outfield. I don't know if Stewart can play third because Hayes is not good. I forget I'm not sure how his defense is
Hayes is good defensively. That's what keeps him
still.
out there.
Yeah. It's just like the same old thing with the Reds. They have not as many options this year as they had in the past, but there's still question marks, or there's guys that could be deserving of starting. So, looking at the ADP, well, I wonder if I'd prefer Wilson Contreras to Stewart because he's going right after
He's going
him.
right between them. Yeah, he's. I just left him out because he wasn't teammates. But yeah, he's right between them.
He seems like the safer pick between the two, I think.
Yes. Oh, he's much safer than the two, for
Yeah, it's
sure.
my and we're talking DC, so I probably go with Wilson Contreras over both of them, honestly. But I think based on skills, I'd prefer Stewart's. Is that like I said that because he's the penciled in DH right now, there's a good chance that someone replaces him.
Yep, that's what I wanted to ask. So I've been going steer for the most part, but I do love Stewart's upside. Like, if I knew for sure Stewart was locked in to play in like at least 5 out of 6 games a week, which he should, but we don't know because the Reds, let's put it that way. And I love Noelvi Marte. I think he's actually going to play. We saw him in the postseason play at center field for them, and he actually played really well late. So, the Ke'Bryan Hayes thing murks things up in a few other positions, but this happens every offseason, and somehow it works out in Cincinnati. Let's head to second.
But
Yeah.
would you steer away from the situation if you had... Thank you.
So proud. So, like right now, Ryan's rolling his eyes and going, "Thank God this isn't on my show." But hey, if you
And
don't
every
think
other
I'm using
listener as well.
if you don't think I'm using that one on that show at some point, you're so wrong, people. I am
Put on a
stealing
legal
that
pad right
thing.
now.
Yep, it's a done deal. All right, let's steer this conversation to second base now. And this one stood out to me for a few reasons. Is there two of them are young players that are very popular, yet they're going behind another young player, which shocked me when I saw his ADP. Not that it doesn't deserve it, just didn't expect them here. So three second basemans. You got Zdane Rafaela is the sixth second baseman off the board with an ADP of 139. You have Jackson Holliday, the seventh second baseman at 142. Luke Kuechel, the eighth second baseman at 145. So 139, 142, 145. That they're in the order 6, 7, 8. But like I was saying, Ben, we saw Jackson Holliday went 17, 17, I believe, last year. Started getting better as the season went on. That was great. Luke Kuechel, power is a concern. Averages OBP skills, great. Runs like crazy. Zdane Rafaela is going ahead of them. And I bring this up for the fact that Zdane's been there an extra year. Like, we've been optimistic about his skill set. I say we as a community have been optimistic about his skill set. I was always annoyed when they move him around so much. It was like shortstop, second, outfield. You'd see him struggle when they would do that. Where are you at on this one? Because I don't think many would like right out the gate put Rafaela in this group, but I don't think it's that far off. You're muted.
My mistake. It's been a while
All
since I've
good.
done that. I've never really understood the love that Rafaela has gotten. It's not a Yankee thing either. It's just me being completely honest as a fantasy baseball player. And this is something I think I was mentioning in the Discord. I think Rafaela came up before a while back. I said the same thing. And this has been my reasoning in the previous couple seasons with Rafaela is that he's hitting ninth. And that's a massive difference compared to someone like Jackson Holliday, who's going to be hitting leadoff in front of Gunnar Henderson. I think Jordan Westbrook's projected bat second for the Orioles and everybody else. And then same thing with Kiesel. We mentioned when we talked about whatever the topic was that Kiesel's projected to hit third for the Twins. And then just looking at Rafaela, yeah, he's got some power and speed, but last year he only had 70 runs, 15 homers, 75 RBIs, 19 steals, and hit 246. I don't know if that's the serving of a 136 ADP or whatever it is right now. Yeah, it's 139. And then Holiday, I think he showed some pretty good growth last year. His between the two, I would just pick Holiday because of the lineup position. I don't know if they're going to platoon Holiday. He actually didn't, he wasn't treated like a platoon player last year. I don't, they shouldn't platoon him because he's so young.
If
He's like
they
they're
platoon Holiday, they'll be rioting in Baltimore.
Yeah, so he should play all the time regardless of lefty, unless it's maybe it's like Chris Sale or something like that. Maybe give him a day off, but that's fine. So I would be if I were to do my rankings right now, I'd be between Holiday and Kiechel as the my favorite of the two, and I won't draft Rafael on any teams with his ADP being this high. I still want a ninth hitter that early in my draft, and yeah, and I'll defend that all the time if someone wants to come at me. But you're losing so many plate appearances at that point in the draft. Even at a 12, it's like your 10th. It's your 13th player, and a 15, that's like your ninth player. I need someone who's hitting top five at least in the lineup at that point. And even like what Rafael does is it's fine, but it makes more sense going past pick 100 like he was last or 200 like he was last year.
Yeah, you made a great point there because I can see like where just from the naked eye people go, they see the, near 20 homers, 20 steals, hits like 240, 250. That kind of mimics what Jackson Holliday did. Okay, cool. Similar. But you nailed it, like the counting stats, it should be a world of difference based on the plate to plate the batting order spot, which is a great point. Like right before the show, I took Jackson Holliday on the 10-11 turn in a 12 teamer. So over Rafael and company. So I'm with you on that full-heartedly. I think Jackson Holliday also has another level to him we haven't seen yet. This guy was a top prospect for a reason. We saw some massive growth this last year, really had his moments of shining at times. So I think leading off for this Orioles team, they're kind of disappointed as a whole. If they can stay healthy this year, it's a big if. Like you said, why can't he score like 120 runs? Why can't he be like a 25-25 guy? I think there's so many levels to Jackson Holliday that I think come March, we're talking about a guy right now going 142. I think as bad as second base has been, he's going closer to 100. I would imagine. Like, I think people see him and realize that if you're going for a ceiling type play at a bad position, he's going to get bumped, I think, quite a bit.
Especially if he starts stealing in spring training and then shows off the speed that we always know that he was capable of producing. So yeah, I would definitely lean Holiday.
Yep,
What
and
about Keisha?
Kiesel.
What about Keisha and Rafaela for you though?
See, that's the thing is, I love Kiesel. I like him a lot. I guess it really, and it's hard to say like what your team needs because when you're picking him, this is your starting second baseman. Kiesel hasn't showcased the power, but I love the batting average. I love the speed. I love the fact he's going to hit the middle of that order. And that alone, like if I draft accordingly, like I've taken a lot of like Pete Alonso's and stuff already. I can use that to offset. So it's kind of like your team build. I like Kiesel a lot. So I would probably take Kiesel over Sinead Rafaela, which really feels weird to say because with Rafaela, you're at least getting help in all five categories. Now, how much help is the question of the day? But you're getting help where Kiesel blows them out of the water, probably in average and speed and likely in the run producing categories as well. So, yeah, I go Kiesel.
Yep, I would say so too.
All right, let's hit a shortstop. We're too early shortstop. And I bring this up because last night, and I had to make this decision on the 2-3 turn. Zach Neto is the fifth shortstop off the board, ADP of just about 30. Trey Turner is the sixth shortstop off the board, ADP 31, Ben. Talk about literally going right next to each other in drafts. And on the 2-3 turn, this is the decision that has to be made to pair with your Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judges of the world. Tough first world decisions, Ben. We have Neto, who's been a 2020 guy. We have Turner, who's been a very good batting average, tons of speed, some power guy, but getting older and the consistency is there, but not what it once was, if that makes sense. So where are you at on the Turner Neto, who I like them both a lot. I want to hear your answer first before I say who I picked.
Yeah, I know right now that I'll have a tough time ordering these two when I go to do my shortstop rankings. What stands out for me with Neto is the barrel rate and the hard hit, and like basically the power metrics are so much better than what Turner's are. But then looking at their actual stats, Turner killed Neto in actual average last year. That's like the big difference. But if you go by XBA, Turner was at 278, Neto was at 261. So only 17 point difference, whereas it was like 50 points in real batting average. So I know not everyone takes XBA, I don't know, as seriously as I probably do, but I see that it's a lot closer. So maybe that helps me push Neto ahead of Trey just because his barrel rates, 14% versus Trey's 5.8 last year. And Turner is older, and he has had hamstring problems in the past, which kind of curbed his steals that one year. He went back to 30 steals. Actually, that's Neto. Turner got back to 36 last year. Yeah, only 15 homers, but he hit 304. So, yeah, I think it really comes down to your philosophy. If you want a strong average early, then I think it's pretty clearly Turner is who you would take. I don't want to do the cop out where it's like, okay, who do you take? Who'd you take in your first pick? Because this is a turn pick, right?
Let's just be real. If you took Shohei or Judge, you already have a good bat.
I'm going Neto probably then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that answers my question for me.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Like if you're taking more than, even if you throw Witt in there out of the top three, they're all hitting for pretty decent batting average. Like they're not killing you in the batting average department.
Yeah. And I, because like on the surface, well, actually, no, it was 257 last year for Neto. I was looking at it backwards. He had 249 in 2024. So, yeah, I think that's below what his XBA was, is what I said. So there's, and he's, I don't know, he doesn't strike out that much, Neto, I don't think. What's his K rate? His K rate was 27%, but he's fast. Yeah, I he's probably on the ascent while Turner's on the decline. So, yeah, hopefully I remember to have them in this order, Neto first and Turner.
I took Neto. Yes, I took Neto with my pick.
Well done, Bubba.
It's two reasons. And I love Trey Turner. Like, if it's one of those where like you're in the middle of round three, I'm talking about a 12-teamer, and here comes Trey Turner still hanging around, like, that's outstanding to me. I think that's a great pick to make. Or let me throw this out to you before I keep going. Let's say, because we'll see this happen come March. What if you went to Tarik Skubal, number one? Does that make you take Trey Turner instead of Zach Neto?
I probably want someone with more power, honestly.
Okay, so still with Neto. Okay.
I would lean Neto in that case, but I would probably, I'd have to see who's going in that range. But I think Neto's more balanced across the five categories than Turner is. So I think that's why I would go Neto still, probably.
I agree. Like, I think Neto's, like, barring something crazy, he's at least 25-25 with 30-30 upside, which means he should have, like, 85-85 runs in RBI as a floor, you would think. And if he hits 250-plus, like, okay, like, does the runs RBI as an average jump off a page? No, but do they hurt you by any means? Not a chance. Like, they're still helping you. Where Trey, it's like, if he's not hitting 20-plus homers, like, it's good, but, okay, he has to steal 30 bases in that instance. He hits for average. He should score a ton of runs. So it's one of those, like, you got a guy that's going to around 300 and score over 100 runs potentially. But what's the rest of the profile? So that's where the balance comes. That's why I just wanted to bring it up. It's really interesting watching the two of them go together, where it was only a few years ago, Ben, where Trey Turner was like, people argued for the top pick overall. And now we're talking Neto overtaking him, rightfully so, at this turn.
Yeah, I took him first overall once. I remember that.
Yep. It made sense at the time. That's probably like your first year now, thinking back at it. Pretty close.
I think it was 2022 when I did my best year in the main event. I took him first.
There you go. Yeah. All right, let's head to the hot corner. Third base here. We talked about this. Both these names have been mentioned on the show already. Noelvi Marte is the ninth third baseman off the board, ADP of 133. Jordan Westberg's the 10th third baseman off the board at 135. Noelvi Marte finished the year, like I said, very strong. Should be the starting center fielder, but you get that wonderful third base eligibility. And again, people forget because he was such a high prospect. He's only 24 this year, which is crazy to think about. And then you got Jordan Westberg, another guy. So both these guys have been hyped a lot. Westberg just can't stay healthy. But when healthy, dude still hit 17 home runs last year. But he'll be 27, weirdly enough. So where are you at on the Noelvi Marte versus Jordan Westberg situation?
Did you pick them because I kind of poo-pooed Westberg in the Discord the other day?
Maybe, but actually that was part of it, because I remember that was yesterday when I made the outline and he'd mentioned that. But it's also because I'll pick Marte in this every single time. I'm a huge Marte fan, but I'm curious. I wanted to bring your Westberg thoughts to the table here, a part of this discussion, basically.
Yeah, so if you look at like underlying skills, Westberg's got him beat. He has the better barrel rate than Marte, at least last year, the better exit velocity, better hard hit, better XBA. Basically, everything Statcast is better for Westberg. It really comes down to steals, because in 339 game or at bats, Marte had 10 steals, and Westberg, in roughly the same amount of playing time, had one steal. And if you can get steals from your corner, I'm going to be very interested in that. And my initial argument was I knew Westbrook was going to bat second probably or top of the lineup for the Orioles, but Marte is projected to hit second for the Reds between Friedel and Ellie, which is a pretty good spot as well. And I could even see Marte becoming the leadoff hitter instead of Friedel because I don't know, Friedel's all right. Yeah, I don't think he's anything special. So average-wise, they were like the same last year. It makes sense while actually, well, you know, the tiebreaker could be that Marte has outfield as well. So I think because of the speed in the two positions, I'll go Marte.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I like Marte quite a bit. So I'm going there. I think there's a power speed component to him. Like the average, what was it last year? He's still at 263 when all things were said and done. We saw the plate skills get better, all the things you mentioned. Like, I think there's a level where we might finally see the skills break out to what we expected from him. Like, why can't he be like a Zach Neto type, honestly, in this profile? I think, and he's got the ballpark to play in. I think there's a lot to like there. So I love Nolan Marte this season. Sadly enough, I think more people are going to keep catching on to that as draft season takes place, because the ADP we're seeing now at 133, he's gone as high as 118, and I think it's going to keep climbing. I want to ask you about this one real quick. It's one more third baseman. It's not a debate. He's just sitting by himself here. That's Isak Paredes. ADP's 204, Ben. Isak Paredes, we know, missed a lot of time with an injury last year, but the Astros have flat out said he's already training. They're expecting no limitations. Now, this is the Astros again. Keep that in mind. But no limitations this year. So where are you at on Isak? Because this price tag, like when we talk – past pick 200, where, you know, right before him is Royce Lewis, Addison Barger, Matt Shaw, Matt Chapman. It's just a bunch of question marks after him. What are your thoughts on this ADP?
If I'm not mistaken, this is later than what Paredes was going last year.
Much later. I think,
yeah, it's at least a couple rounds in the DC. I would definitely take him over Addison Barger. Barger's a platoon bat. Paredes is not. I did say Shaw intrigued me on that one show, but not enough to take him ahead of someone like Paredes, who's done it before, I think. Although Shaw has the speed aspect, but Paredes should be batting relatively high in the Astros lineup. What is the projection? He's fifth. Yeah, that's high enough for me.
In middle of the order.
Yeah, where Shaw would probably be like eighth or ninth.
Once Greg Oden gets hurt, then he'll move up. So,
no, you're hating one of my favorite players to draft. with Paredes, the only thing I can think of is that people saw that he's like 70% healed, or his like hamstring 70% attached to his bone or something, whatever the report was, still after him coming back. Still, that's the only thing I can think of, because at this point, I Paredes can do the gimmick with the pull air rate thing, and it's supposed to work out well in Houston, and I think it would if he didn't get hurt last year, because he had 20 homers in 100 games.
Yeah, he was doing just fine, for sure.
Yeah, so that's arguably 30 homers in a full season for Paredes if he stays healthy the entire year. And he's hitting behind Yordan or Greg Oden, Altuve, Correa, Walker's right behind him projected-wise, Jesus Sanchez is there, Yainer Diaz is hitting eighth. It's just a really good lineup, and I would... It sounds ugly, but like going Walker and Paredes around pick 200, like two consecutive picks, that would be a pretty nice corner. If you're waiting on corner, just grab those two guys and hope there's like 55 homers potentially between the two of them.
You nailed the reason I brought this up, Ben. I'm like, we're talking about two guys that, barring injuries, are locked into their middle of the order spots in the lineup and their teammates to top it off.
Exactly.
And they have the short porch. Now, Paredes is linked to trades, but it's like Boston. Okay, another short porch with the monster. It just bodes well for both these guys at their ADPs. All right, let's hit up a couple outfielder ones before we head on out of here. Lubob, Luis Robert, who's obviously, I'd be shocked if he's not traded, but I've said that every trade deadline, so why not say it again? Lubob right now is he's the 28th outfielder off the board, ADP of 129. Andy Páez going right after him, 29th outfielder, ADP of 132. You got Robert, who played 110 games this past year, 14 homers, 33 steals with a 223 average, Ben. And then you got Páez, who played in 156 games. I don't think many people realize he played nearly every game for the Dodgers. 27 homers, 14 steals, and hit 272. A really, really good, like, full season with the Dodgers, going right behind Lou Bob, who just doesn't play a full season ever. So what are your thoughts on these two?
This one's really tricky because there's some pretty strong pros and cons in either direction for the two of them. I know I made this comment for a fact in the Discord as well, and it's how Pod has projected so low in the lineup for the Dodgers because of how stacked they are.
Yep.
Whereas Robert would probably be the leadoff hitter for the White Sox if he's playing. So that's a massive difference. And then even looking at the skills, the only thing that was really off between like walk rate, K rate, ground ball, fly ball, chase, contact, exit velocity, barrel, all those things, is that Páez was better and actually worse in walk rate, but better in contact rate. Otherwise, they're pretty close. Robert had a 10% barrel versus Páez's 8.4. But Páez had like a 10 point higher XBA, which is saying a lot because of how bad Robert Jr.'s batting average was last year. XWOBA was almost the same. XSLUG's almost the same. So just the lineup position alone makes me want to say Robert Jr. But they're going at what? 130? No, they're going, yeah, like 130. Mm-hmm. This feels like one where I would alternate who I take maybe if I am in that spot a couple times. But let me look at Robert's season games. There's at bats. Yeah, he hasn't hit 400 at bats since 2023.
So that's let me ask you that then real quick. I'll let you keep going. But knowing that he's played 100 games, like he hasn't, the plate appearances don't rack up. Does it really matter if he's hitting at the top of the order versus the bottom of the order?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I actually have a note in my sheet saying do not draft. Yeah, Luis Robert's on my do not draft list. So, yeah, I guess I have to go Páez.
There we go. But this is why I wanted to bring it up, because I think people are still enamored with Lou Bob's skills, and rightfully so. The dude is extremely skilled. It's just out of the combination of does he care and can he stay healthy. So maybe a new location can change a lot of that for sure. I haven't clicked the button yet. I know I have at least one Páez share early on. I love Páez's skills. It is frustrating at the bottom of the order, but it's an elite team. Like, unlike other nine-hole hitters, most games he might still get five at-bats because that's just how good they are. So it's like an exception to the rule, I guess. Still, I agree with everything you said in that sense, but he gets a bump now. Did he overachieve last year? That's another question. Still super young. But yeah, I have Páez over Lou Bob as well, and it hurts because I agree. I Robert is literally one of the most talented baseball players in the draft. He just can't get out of his own way, basically. And that's the problem. All right, we got a three-way here. Little menage when it comes to the draft room. Jurickson and Profar, 41st outfielder off the board, ADP of 183. Addison Barter, 42nd off the board, ADP 183. So right next to each other. Ian Happ, the 43rd off the board at 189. So they're all pretty much going in the same little pocket here. And I bring it up for a couple reasons. Like Profar is like a guy that's got some power, some speed, some average. Barter's this power guy, but maybe platoons. Ian Happ's become more of a power than an average guy. But they all kind of have their own value at their own points. So where do you sit here at the 41st, 42nd, 43rd outfielders off the board?
My lean would be to have Happ as my preference amongst the three. As I'm speaking, I'm looking at Profar sprint speed because something that he did last year was unexpected was the steals. He had 9 steals in 371 plate appearances, which almost matched his total of 10 in 2024 when he played the full year. Yeah, Profar sprint speed is only 24th percentile. Happ has lost steals, but he only had 6 last year, Happ, versus 13 in 2024, but Happ is like as consistent as they come. And I'm not mentioning Barter yet because he is a platoon bat, and his average wasn't even that good last year. It was 243. The only thing that Barter has going compared to these guys is that he is also third base eligible, which I guess in a DC kind of would boost his value. But at this point in the draft, I'd rather go with this who's better than who has the extra position at this point, where it's a pretty someone you have to rely on for the whole year in the DC. So I would definitely go Happ, and I think I'd probably go Profar over Barter just because Profar should play every day. And on the Braves, I don't know if he'll hit as high as he did last year. They kind of left Profar leadoff when Acuña came back.
Yep.
And they actually project the same thing on roster resource still, which would be interesting, but it would be huge for Profar if that happens again, and if Olsen, Acuna, Baldwin, right, if the Braves bounce back and Profar hits leadoff, he could be a massive, massive value. I just want to go to the Blue Jays real quick to see what it looks like for Barger. Yeah, he's projected to hit like seventh, and he's in the platoon. So, I get like I had Barger and I added him, so I get. This is probably also the reason why drafting so soon when the season ends could be a bad thing, because like, you don't have time to step back and think about what happened. But yeah, Barger's a great add, but I don't think
recency bias.
Exactly, but I don't. He should not be going ahead of Ian Happ, because Ian Happ is like a top three hitter for the Cubs, and I don't know. It's just this is why I should draft right now, but there's other reasons why I should draft too. So I'm weighing the Flip options.
the Profar one's very enticing. I had Profar Happ Barger in this one for me. I think Profar is going to lead off, but Walt Weiss is the new manager of the Braves. He said at the winter meeting on Tuesday. He wants to try to keep the order the same, but he's going to talk to Acuna, and if Acuna wants to lead off, they might work on that. That's the discussion to be made. And to be fair, if Acuna wants to, he'd probably listen to Acuna. It's kind of how that game works. But that means let Profar hit second. Like, that still works fine with me. I think Profar has more speed than people think, so he's a good power speed. Like, he does a little bit of everything at that point in the draft that makes me excited. But your Ian Happ part, like, we know who he is. If you want to be a boring drafter, Ian Happ is your dude. Like, going to hit 250-ish, going to hit 25 home runs, going to maybe steal 10 bases if you get it. Like, you know what you're getting with Ian Happ, and he gets them, like, early part of the order, to your point. So I got Profar, Happ, and Barger, but the Profar, Happ's pretty close, let's put it that way. Last one here. It goes deeper in the outfield. The 55th outfielder off the board, Elliot Ramos, ADP of 230. The 56th outfielder out the board, Ramon Laureano at 231. I bring this up, Ben. We have Ramos, who the overall stat line was okay, but disappointed people last year. Then you have Laureano, who had a phenomenal year playing his most games ever at 132 games. So do you go with kind of what we know, steady back-to-back profile of Ramos, or do you take the chance on Laureano in San Diego?
This one's tough. I pulled up lineup positions, as I always do.
One might be leading off, one's hitting like fifth.
They're both pretty. Yes, Laureano's projected to hit fourth for the Padres, and then Ramos fifth. But I think the Giants like to put Ramos lead off versus lefties sometimes, or at least they move him up. So that kind of boosts his playing time on the season as a whole, or is that bad? His play appearances. If you look at the skills, I would say Laureano, because his barrel rate was so much higher, his XBA was so much higher, all the good power metrics are so much higher. But Ramos is younger. Laureano's—he came out of nowhere last year. It was almost like a career year for him, at least skills wise. I would argue, you could argue potentially. I don't think he's had years of better steals, Laureano, which is why he's been appealing in the past. You've been hoping for like a 2020 profile, never really got there. The thing is, he hadn't played. Last year was his career high in games, Laureano, 132. The last time he played 120 was 2019, and he's only been above 100 games played three times in his career, and he's been around for eight seasons now, Laureano, which that's kind of wild that he, well, the PEDs kind of played a role in that too along the way, so he got suspended. But with I know we talked about Ramos, I think in a projection review, and how he kind of just died at the end of the season. Man, this is a tough one. This is one where I might have to use projections as a tiebreaker, because just based on situation and skills and just who they are as players, just like in that idea, it's tough to distinguish one from the other. And of course, they're going back to back. So, yeah, I don't have a good answer right now. I'll look at the projections while you give your opinion.
So my answer is, if you want the boring floor, you take Ramos. Like, we know who he is. He was too patient last year. If he gets back to more of the aggressiveness, maybe he's even better. There's a lot to like there with Ramos. But if you believe Laureano can stay healthy, which, to your point, you nailed it, he's only played over 100 games three times. There was a point early in his career with the A's that we were like, Laureano and Pham were like both 2020 dudes. Like, they were the Rosarena's, Adelis Garcia's of the world. Like, that's who they were. So we saw a glimpse of that last year in San Diego. San Diego's the better offense as a whole, a better team as a whole. At least that's my unbiased opinion, of course. So it's kind of a, as you build your team, shoot your shot type deal. I'd probably lean towards Ramos just because at least he should play every day, health-wise, barring something where Laureano's got so many question marks. So I lean Ramos, but that's not saying I won't take Laureano. It depends on my team build, because at this price tag, Laureano could outperform his ADP in a heartbeat if he puts together like 140 games. And that's where I could see at this point in the draft is like your outfielder 4 or even 5, depending on your draft. Taking a guy like Laureano could just jumpstart you over your team, because in a DC, you're taking like 10 outfielders. So if it doesn't work out, you have backup. Like, I could see taking Laureano over Ramos here in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I looked at their player pages, and Steamer does like Ramos more than Laureano. And yeah, this thing, like you kind of agreeing with the playing time issues with Laureano in the past, I think I would probably go with Ramos as well, because he's only 26. Ramos, he has growth to just improve in general. Because one thing I liked last year with Ramos is that he got better versus righties. He just got worse versus lefties. So if he can get back to being a lefty masher and be like average versus righties, he could be a lot better than Laureano.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like Ramos is still so young. Heck, they might trade him. Like, that's a weird rumor going out there. Like, there's a lot going on with him that, like, there's so many levels. Like, he could be a lot better, or we could see like just more frustration or something from a young player. Where Laureano is strictly health to me. If he plays 140 plus games, you got a pretty darn good ball player there at that ADP. Where Ramos is just, I think you're going to get a better player than last year, but I'm also optimistic because I love his skill set. So I'm going to keep rambling on this one because I like both these guys a ton. Like, I would love leaving a DC with both of them if I could. Like, I either both really good for building a team around, but I think I take Laureano just for the sheer upside at that position.
So we'll talk general. Before them, wow, it's a very wild group of ADP. Mike Trout's at pick 209. Look at that.
I almost did a Trout one for you. Where is it? Because he's at 209. I almost did like Trout versus Dalton Varsho or something.
Imagine when Mike Trout's going right a pick ahead of Dalen Lyle. That's kind of wild. Yep. So the thing I wanted to say, though, about Ramos and Laureano is that they're both right-handed. They're both going to play every day. So they're not going to platoon like Mickey Moniak or Willy Abreu, who goes a little bit later, or Kerry Carpenter. So I would value both of them more than probably even Jack Caglione and definitely Jose Caballero. Caballero's not a year-long play. He would fill in for Volpe and then hit the bench as a utility guy. So where they're going, I to your point, I could see if you're trying to like get your outfield 4 and 5 around 225 is what? That's like 15, around 15. If you're like on the 15, 16 turn, you go Ramos, Laureano to finish your outfield. That, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep, that's kind of where I'm at. That's the beauty of building things. And, you know, people probably get annoyed with saying roster construction, but it's true. Like, that's how you build your team. And so many of these ADPs, it's a combination of player versus player, but also at that point of the draft, there's your team's got, especially at the point of Laureano versus Ramos, you have a very good idea of what your team's looking like at that point in time, like where your weaknesses are, where your other aspects are, what's coming up, like your Volpe comments and other things. Like, you can kind of see what's out there to build around. So it's very interesting. It's fun. It should get you excited to start drafting someday, Ben. It really should.
Well, no, I'm looking at the outfielders in the 200s and I'm like, God, this is horrible.
Yep, this is another part of the exercise where it's like, because I did that in my recent DC with Ryan and those guys. I usually don't wait too long on outfielders. It wasn't on purpose. I was more just like taking what the draft gave me and trusting what's going on. And my outfielder base, Ben, is very tricky. It does not look good when I look at the tracker right now. So, yeah, it's like I got bodies. And I just tell That's myself good. It's the whole team, right? It's not like the whole team has to produce, not just the outfield. So, yeah, it's not a great feeling. So, yeah.
And Nick Castellanos is going pick 345.
Now that you mentioned his name, let me check real quick. So I'm pretty sure he's one of the guys on my team because of that ADP. Like, I'm totally cool with it at that point. Nick Castellanos is one of my outfielders. Yes, he is.
That's so he basically nailed his projection last year and he was dropped 200, like 180 picks.
It's all like the negative discussion points. Like, I'm glad you, because I'm the same way. I see him every draft year, and I'm like, why are we hating on him? Like, technically, he's still the starting outfielder for the Phillies, hitting like sixth in that lineup. Like, what's the problem right now?
Yeah, he had like 250, almost 20 homers, 70 runs, 70 RBIs. You can't find that.
I drafted him as my outfield five in this one. I took Acuna, Jaron Duran early, and then I waited forever, and I got Dylan Beavers, Tommy Edman, Nick Castellanos, whatever. But Castellanos was my fifth outfielder, and then I just bombarded outfield. Like, I got Benintendi's and stuff like later. So it's
good,
like,
way to go about it.
That's the way I thought. So that's why I kind of tried a different thing. That's why these early drafts, you know, play with the player pool a bit. And I was okay with the cat as part of my thing. Like, I'm cool with Castellanos as my fourth or fifth outfielder. Like, I have no problem with that at all. So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. I liked the discussion. We might have to do some more stuff like this as draft season goes on, as you keep ramping up your prep before we really dig into your thoughts on drafting. But any final thoughts as you're getting a little look at the ADP here? I know it got your wheels turning a little bit.
Yeah, I don't remember too much of the ADP because I wanted to go with, like, clean slate, no ADP bias when I do my rankings. So I don't even look at ADP. When I make my play, my list, I sort by projected at bats.
A lot of your list is projections, though, right? For the most part.
Well, I use the projections more for drafting than I do ranking my players, because I know a lot of people like to use Tanner Bell's SGP sheet, which kind of orders the players for you based on the projections. I don't want to do that. I want to, like, do like a skills team concept, team lineup construct concept analysis first, and then I'll throw in the projections and see how the ranks compare. Like, if I have a hitter who's projected as like the 100th hitter ahead of someone projected as the 50th hitter, that I might question, okay, why am I doing this? What's the projection I'm seeing? But it's kind of like the second step is when I use the projections.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, looking forward to hopefully getting some more projections one of these days, at least some more accurate projections. That'd be a starting point, and seeing where we go from there. But we'll be back with you guys to keep you going throughout draft season. I got a relief pitching episode coming up this week for you guys that are getting after it early. Got two relief pitching quote gurus to help me break down team by teams. That should be dropping Thursday for you. So we got that. We got much, much more. But until next time, check out Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDentric, and this is Benched with Bubba, episode 796. Catch y'all later.